Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest running podcast, now in our 19th year. Today's podcast is brought to you by Pavilion Payments, trusted by over 400 land-based casinos and iGaming sites. Maximize your revenue with better funding options through Pavilion Payments' complete suite of integrated solutions. Enhance player experiences with VIP Preferred, offering quick access to cash, flexible deferred settlement options, and the highest industry limits. Learn more at PavilionPayments.com or visit them at the Global Gaming Expo booth 4411 to discover how Pavilion Payments can customize your check service. And this week we sit down with Darren Dorsey, the President and CEO of the Association of Gaming Equipment Manufacturers, or AGEM. AGEM has been a major player in the gaming industry since its inception more than 20 years ago. Darren Dorsey was named Executive Director in 2022 after some time with Aristocrat as General Counsel and was recently named President and CEO in recognition of the progress he's made in moving the AGEM organization forward. He spoke with me and iGaming Business Editor Robin Harrison via Zoom in late August. Darren, thanks for joining us. We appreciate you coming on here.
Oh, always happy to be here, Roger, and good to be with you as too, as Robin. Good to see you as well.
Great. Well, we do this every year. This is in conjunction with our Progressive Products preview issue, which comes out prior to G2E and really serves as a preview for G2E, obviously the most important trade show in the U.S. So it's really always good to catch up with you. So why don't we start with, what is this, your fourth year at AGEM, correct?
Third. Sure, okay. So coming up on three. In middle of 22. Sort of in the late spring of 2022 is when heading into the third year.
Great. Well, you've done a great job so far, and this year has been particularly busy. Give us a little thumbnail of what AGEM has accomplished during the past year.
I know it's a busy time. Obviously, you have a lot of your readership, your viewership, in the supplier sector, there never is a dull moment. There never is a dull day. So it's exciting out there. And to be a trade association for that supplier group, it's more about the business part of it is trying to just find ways. We've gotten more involved in some regulatory, some legislative, some sort of advocacy efforts to try to work through the regulatory environment to maybe talk about what's the best practices for 2025, 2020, 30, rather than the way things were done in 2005, 2000. We've got these statutes and regulations that have now been on the books for 20, 30, 40 years. So we have spent a lot of time getting into the weeds with our membership on those issues. So it's busy there. That's never going to change. And there's new market opportunities around the globe that are happening. But I'd say also from a trade association perspective, the things that we've really tried to do, especially in the past year, and we're going to continue on, is trying to figure out more ways for our membership, whether that's our associate members, which is the suppliers to the suppliers, or those manufacturer companies, to just spend time together, just be around each other. Because remember, we went through this strange period where two years, 3 years, where people really never came in contact with each other. And we asked Zoom, Teams, those became ubiquitous and part of everybody's life. But we're trying to find ways at least every 90 days to get everybody together, whether a thought leadership event, whether that's a social, networking reception, over an appetizer or something somewhere at an industry association, whether that's around, legislator events, regulatory events, commercial events, but just try to have people sit in a room and have an hour or two with each other about every 90 days. That's something that's been a change, and we're trying to do that and implement that more. And as you see more of our event calendar, it's just chances for all of our members to talk to each other, talked with colleagues in the industry and find out what's going on. We feel that that's a really good vehicle that AGEM can serve its membership and serve the industry a little bit better.
Okay.
And Darren, I was wondering if you could tell us a bit more about the membership numbers and, what's the profile of the new joiners? How are you growing and who's coming in essentially?
Yeah, thanks, Robin. It's the view when you talk about the membership on the manufacturers, those national global suppliers, key suppliers, everybody has been a member or is a member, has been for quite some time. So mostly the things we have people come and go, maybe new entrants to that supplier, to the supplier. And you might have somebody that's in an adjacency that might have contract manufacturing or some significant skill set on that front. that want to get over into the gaming vertical. You have some new suppliers that are trying to be, you know, supply chains have been opened up around the world in some of these last few years. And so there are people that moved from AB computer or technology suppliers, and they've moved over into the regulated gaming space. Law firms, banks, financial institutions, accounting firms, that's who we're seeing, you know, those new members come from. We have, say, you know, in the last couple of years, you know, even Playtech, you know, some international larger companies that are focusing in the online space. We're trying to use as AGM, we're trying to find and communicate and gather some of those maybe online only operators that are manufacturers, key suppliers around the world. That's maybe our next foray of folks to get there. But I would say we've just had our membership numbers right around that 150 on a total number. We had a difficult situation where we got close to probably mid 170s, 180s in 2019, 2020, and the world really changed for everybody. And you saw a lot of people in, especially in Asia, you saw a lot of places that were really, really blocked off. So some companies have either unfortunately maybe not made it or moved away from gaming or moved away from regulated gaming and focused on other areas. So that's been that push-pull on top of M&A activity. We always see this, and we've got large companies that are doing this right now. Member companies acquire or merge with other member companies, it seems like every year, even on the smaller supplier space, the mid-level supplier, and now you're seeing the large supplier space. So that's something that kind of always has our, you know, we make the analogy, we kind of bob, right? And that 140 to 160 range is where we're most comfortable at.
Okay. And I just listened to you there. The AGM membership is really kind of, it's becoming more varied than ever before, isn't it? You know, you mentioned
yes,
kind of like suppliers of suppliers, but you know, then like the diversity included within that, you know, is quite kind of vast. So how does that kind of evolve? You know, the membership and the role of AGM as you kind of grow beyond, you know, that kind of core manufacturer base?
It's a great point. And what we try to do is maybe it's a lot of times where you see somebody that might be in the technology sector. Mm-hmm. It's maybe a consequence or a benefit of our AGM membership. Gaming and regulated gaming is a much more mature, sophisticated, recognized form of activity rather than maybe 20, 30, 40 years ago where it was more of a pocket. So you're starting to see companies that have technology and technology companies and innovation companies are trying to find out, hey, regulated gaming in some various form or fashion is here. We like to be the introduction point. People want to come to ask and, you know, whether they'll bump into maybe one of our members that gets introduced to me as AGM or Allison McCoy, who runs our membership or events, and Tracy Cohen over in Europe, or Connie Jones, who does our responsible gaming at somewhere around the, what does AGM do? We try to be the recognition or the introduction point about what regulated gaming, because we focus in that regulated privileged license environment, not any of those markets. So if people want to enter the space or have questions about the space or want to be associated with people in that space, that's where we can provide a little bit of that feedback. Plus, we're trying to maybe put some introduction about new market opportunities. We put on these thought leadership events a couple of times a year, and it's an introduction point on new markets, what's going on in markets, having regulators come and speak. So maybe we could be that introduction point that those people maybe otherwise would not receive or couldn't get to just by going to a trade show maybe or bumping into. And so AGM is that front door to the regulated space for a lot of people that might be interested in it.
Well, you mentioned regulated gaming. Obviously, your relationship with the regulators and even the legislators is very important. I know in Nevada, we've had a lot of turnover at the top there. We have a new chairman there. I know you've had a good relationship with Dave Rebuck here in New Jersey, but he's gone now. So how do you say? Say you keep a great relationship with the legislator and the regulators when they turn over so frequently.
Well, I mean, you know, Roger, like you said, it's just maybe that same thing as being that front door to, hey, if you'd like to get a viewpoint of a lot of different people on the supplier side, instead of picking up the phone and calling a one direct, one licensee on one particular issue, AGEM can do that, right? We can be that person that hears from a lot of its members in a lot of different ways and attack issues in a lot from a lot of different angles. So whether that's with Chair Hendrick in Nevada, who's come back into this industry from somewhere else, we always want to be there to be a sounding board for him, for his agency, or for any chairs and any other regulatory authorities by saying, we're going to make this possible change. AGEM is something. Would you like somebody to comment on something? Would you like us to review some proposed rules? Would you like to get some information out to the industry? Rather than going to 50 people individually, let's maybe use the AGEM communications channel and the AGEM banner to get some of that information out. So, Roger, your question though is how do you do that? I think it's also being present and being available, going to all these industry events and not just trade shows, but regulator events, legislator events, being present, just going to every single workshop that you can, go talk to them and kind of be out there and be present. And instead of saying that we're here if you have any questions for us and if you want to talk about a particular issue. So I think it's just trying to get in front of them as best we can, but doing so because we can protect our membership, because individual companies may have a big licensing matter or a big suitability, you know, some large issue that's in front of them. That's not the right time for them to maybe approach a key regulator, because that maybe might mix the message out. AGEM doesn't have any licenses itself. Sure. I don't have to be there on any particular issue and is seeking approval for something. So we can really give an unbiased direct answer on questions that he or she may ask. And that's how we can best serve our members.
Sure. Do you leverage the relationship members of your board has? I mean, a lot of your board members are government affairs people or compliance people. So they obviously have their own individual relationships. Do you use that as well?
Yes. And we also have used some of those AGEM resources where we've got a great team of our own contracted professionals who are lawyers, lobbyists, you know, very experienced people in a lot of these key areas. And so we keep a lot of channels of communication open to try to keep the ball moving down the field, so to speak, for a couple of bad mixed metaphors for some sports things there. But, you know, it's just like you said, this is an ecosystem that everybody likes being in this industry. It's a very good collaborative industry, especially on the supplier side. Competition is important, but people have a lot of the same common views. So keeping those people and keeping that table as large as we can, you know, always, hey, does somebody have a relationship on this? Because we're trying to get, you know, in this particular state or with this particular tribe or on this particular issue, we've got a wide, vast network of people to pick up the phone and call and try to get to the bottom of it.
Sure. That makes sense. So obviously, your members are really interested in gaming expansion, or you know, not only in the U.S. but around the world. How do you keep them up on that kind of information?
We just like I referenced there, we try to keep those professionals, you know, whether they're members, whether they're engaged professionals for the association itself, kind of keep a standing item. Hey, there's been a lot of activity down in Mexico over the last 12 to 14 months with a new reform decree. Hey, is there anything that's going on right now? Having those law firms be able to answer general questions from the monthly call amongst the members, having some experts about Brazil, about where some technology standards are on that new opportunity, where the licensing, what's the timeline for the having Vic, you know, having G3, having some of these other, you know, key and, you know, like GGB, everything else, just having that network of people that are always here to provide a voice about what's going on. We can just keep people connected. That's how AGEM can serve everybody as best, in our best way.
Great.
And you mentioned earlier the work that Connie Jones does around responsible gaming, and with Responsible Gaming Education Month coming up, you know, from September. It'd be interesting just to, you know, just hear more about, you know, first of all, I suppose, what that kind of RG kind of a issue is to AGEM, and you know what kind of Connie's work around that has been in recent years.
Yeah, and it's important, you know, Connie's one of those highly respected people in that space that I mentioned earlier, just how AGEM can provide a vehicle and communication because of the relationships. There's not a single person in the RG world that doesn't have a relationship with Connie and communicate with Connie. So that's a huge benefit to all of us at AGEM, because any of these issues, she represents our side of the business so well Whether that's the organizations, Keith and Barbara, and you know, we do all kinds of, you know, at NCPG, the folks over in Europe, whatever it is. So Connie's there to deliver that message because she's got great relationships. But that message the last few years, we are cognizant on the supplier side that while it doesn't maybe not attack us through the front door because it's maybe an operator issue, we have to be proactive in thinking down the road and putting pieces of technology and putting awareness programs, not just that puts out there to the world, but also how we manage these particular issues within our companies. Because we have a lot of employees, we have a lot of people that participate in activities. So responsible gaming is not just part of our commercial, you know, mantra that we have to do. It's also, we're large employers for people to put programs and awareness programs and campaigns. So September being RG month, we're going to do a nice panel hosted by AGEM for some experts. I believe it's like the September the 17th. Connie's putting that on. Got a folks in Europe. We got the partners with YGAM. So Ian Shanahan's going to do it. I know Jennifer Shatley from here in the U.S. And Alan Feldman is going to be doing it as well from, you know, who's a longtime person in that space. It's more about taking part in those activities and being proactive, not reactive on the RG issues, especially when you talk about the U.S. Because everyone sees what happens in Europe, in the U.K., and eventually those do become sort of issues that people need to work through. And it's on legislators' minds, it's on regulators' minds. So let's go ahead and be proactive in how we communicate, how we message, and if there's things that we do to support education, to support research, that's, we're going to continue doing that. And we document actually about 20% of our annual budget each year, a little more than 20% of our operating budget goes to responsible gaming initiatives and funding and partners, whether that's philanthropic endeavors, whether that's research efforts, whether that's support efforts. But that's what we do as an organization. So we put our money where our mouth is.
Well, we'd be remiss not to mention the AGA golf tournament, which you put on every year. This year was held at Shadow Creek in Vegas. You raised, how much money did you make? I mean, overall, you've raised several million dollars in the 25 years it's been held.
It's been, I think it's over 2 million is the total number. I believe it's right around 200,000. Is what the total raise was this year. I know that Art, you know, with the ICRG and Art Pikowski and his team there, it's a great organization. But thanks for mentioning that, Roger. That's why we put that on, right? That money goes to fund research,
right,
and to fund clinical analysis. Let's not talk about anecdotal evidence. Let's not talk about something somebody heard from somebody else, right, because that ends up driving a lot of the discussion from a legislative perspective or a regulatory perspective. No, let's get a scientific review committee. Let's get empirical, science-based clinical research and academic research to get to these issues so that when those times come, we've got fact, not anecdote, right, sure, that backs whatever positions and communications that we're talking about that particular issue.
Sure.
It's interesting that you bring that up, and it kind of leads me on to a bit of a follow-up question. What's your thought in the current kind of state of the discourse around kind of responsible gambling and player protection in the US? Because, you know, from, I suppose, kind of from, you know, the kind of media side that Roger and I sit on, there is a lot of anecdotal evidence, but we're not seeing much in the way of kind of facts, you know, from, you know, like certain groups are looking to kind of, you know, reform or limit the industry. So I'm keen to get your thoughts on, you know, the, what's being said, who's being, you know, being saying it, and, you know, kind of from AGEM's perspective.
Yeah, I think that maybe from two points of that, we recognize, because you've got not just iGaming is growing within North America, within this marketplace. So that means that you're going to need to be cognizant and proactive that there are more players that are participating in activity. Mm-hmm. There is a little bit more anonymity associated with those because they're maybe not in a land-based environment. So you've had to tweak some of your programs, tweak some of your methodology. And, you know, a lot of our members, they're putting that in understanding time, player behavior, and, you know, what is happening. Is somebody chasing those types of things and putting some, you know, that's being proactive. But at the same time, it's also being communicating about that issue to legislators, to regulators. Gaming and regulated gaming is, it's just like any other form of activity that's, you know, that it belongs to adults, that it, there are people that might have, that may have or will have issues. But is gaming any different or has a lower incidence level than other forms of it? Let's talk about it in those terms, not because it's only bad because it might be gaming. So trying to get that message out and having some research that aims on that. But I would also say something that really, really covers a concern, especially within the US, that maybe is not so much in other places, is we're late to the game in the regulated, you know, whether it's sports betting, whether it's iGaming. You've got a huge market that is an unregulated black market, whatever terminology we want to use. There are no player protections there. There are no programs that are there. So we as a regulated space sometimes get lumped in to that giant, more unregulated space. So we have to do a better job of telling that message. Is like when we talk about this, we're trying to do things in a responsible, this is the more preferable environment. Rather, this unregulated, which continues to grow and grow and grow, there is nothing there. So if you care about this particular issue, something that you can critically do is truly close out that or eliminate or try to eliminate as best you can that unregulated black market and move everybody into the regulated space, because that's where the programs exist. That's where the technology exists. That's where the innovations exist. And that's where all of us focus on that. We're all willing to play by those same rules. So I just say that that's an interesting thing when it comes to the US, maybe than how other places, there's not nearly as much of a black market in those places and some of those sophisticated, when all forms of gaming have been accepted, adopted, and all, you know, everybody generally goes to the same channel to do so.
Right. Yeah. So AGM has produced some reports in the past on the economic impact of the manufacturing and supplier sector. Are you going to update that report anytime soon?
Yes, we do that. We do it every 2 years. And so our last one was 2 years. So typically in the fall, we get some surveys out and we get those out to all of the membership, and we take with Applied Analysis, our friends there. So that will most likely be finished probably sometime around the spring. Okay. So that we can have that 2024 look back. The unfortunate thing, you know, we had that great tempo for a few years, but that 2020 to 2022 period of time was really difficult to break through and analyze what that economic impact story is. So we made a decision to let's maybe hold off, because let's get back to it's going to be objective, not sort of subjective. That's backward looking. But thanks for bringing that up, Roger. We typically do that and try to hit that before legislative sessions hit in the spring. But it tells a very good story. I think people never realize how large our industry is, whether the hundreds of thousands of direct jobs, you know, and the exponential increase in indirect, and the tens of billions of dollars of direct and indirect economic activity. It's a great story. It's a great message that kind of gets focused over them, because people see these wonderful, our customers, they build these billion-dollar facilities and they put all this capital there. It's great. But we also are an important part of that ecosystem, and it's nice to be able to tell that story and to show the jobs that we create, the capital that we're investing, and the people that we're putting in our various communities, because these companies are not just in Las Vegas. They're around the world, and they're technology companies, right? We're making computers nowadays, right? That's what we're doing. This is that industry.
Great. And of course, one of the ways where the world slash the industry gets to see these kind of what these companies are building is at trade shows, you know, like ICE that we kind of organize, or G2E that we've got coming up in October. And it sounds like it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a really lively edition this year. So I was keen just to kind of find out, first of all, a bit more about AGM's role at the show, and then what's the general kind of consensus from members on, you know, what kind of expect this year? You know, is this going to be a big one for them?
That last question, yes, because you know where this falls on the calendar, it's a very important time for product launches, for new innovations, to sort of preview that for when capital cycles hit, to get something out in the market. And it's a great place to do so, because Las Vegas being an international destination, it fits right at home, right? You can walk through Venetian Palazzo and go back there, and it feels like a gaming show before you even get to the expo hall, right? Which is a good thing. So the answer to your question, yes, you know, everybody's got something new that they're trying to get out there. They want to show. Plus, it's an exciting time like we said, in the M&A world, right? There's a lot of activity. There's a lot of deals happening. So, you know, G2E for the investor community, for the supplier community, this is the time where everybody's in the same place at the same time. So a lot of those, a lot of action, a lot of energy around those discussions as well. But I think that you hit the, you said it earlier, is I think it's really big that the mindset for a lot of people is ICE, you know, going to its new home from London down to Barcelona in after the first of the year. And G2E, you know, these things sit six-ish months apart, give or take, right?
Yeah.
They work on a product release cycle for those big stands where we can do some launches, we can do some programs. So they're key components to anybody's product cycle and commercial plan every year for all of our membership, right? Mm-hmm. And then the suppliers to suppliers, it's a chance for they can come to see all of their customers at one place and one time and do a lot of that business at that time. So everybody's excited, I can tell. But, you know, I always say the term cautiously optimistic, because it is also, we like we just mentioned, I know that we can't say the rearview mirror anymore, but we had a few year period where it was a really difficult time, right? Everybody's just trying to think the next week in front of them, right? That's all we're trying to do. Can we meet cash flow needs? Can we meet production needs? Can we do, you know, how's our business? Now people are back in that, okay, what's our 4-year plan? What's our 5-year plan? So people are being a lot smarter about that, right? Because we had a nice period where everybody finally got back to normal. And there's some positive energy with that. And now people just say, hey, how does this fit within my product cycle? How's this fit with my commercial cycle? What's our plans? What's our message? What's our, you know, back to a commercially focused and strategic view on what I want me to get out of our large shows, right? Whether that's at ICE, whether that's at G2E, or that's with some of the other shows that are out there. You asked what AGM kind of did is we just want to be there for the, you know, the members to have communications, whether that's regulators, legislators, they'll come up and we've got some initiatives that are happening in some states or with some jurisdictions around the world. It's our time as AGM. We also like to support, you know, we have a great longstanding partnership with the AGA and Reed about G2E. And so we want to be there to support them. You know, the chairman's reception with the AGA Hall of Fame, we always support that. You know, it's a great 3 inductees this year. We also do our AGM Memorial Awards that we recognize for commercial professionalism and communications. You know, we do that at 2 p.m. on the Wednesday of the show. We're going to do that in the networking lounge. You know, maybe have a portable bar brought in there to try to generate a little bit more activity, because we've got two really, really worthy recipients this year. We're going to do a press release in about the next week or so about that and get that announced. But so you ask what we try to do for G2E. That's what we try to do, that we just find a way to support all of those people and be wherever we need to be for any discussion that our members, our friends, our partner associations want us to be. That's what we're here for, because it's really about them. It's really about them. It's their week. So how can we support them as best we can?
Of course. Well, we just have one more question, Darren. And again, thanks for taking the time to do this. What are your goals for AGM over the next few years?
I think maybe not just, so we use the term grow, but maybe that's not, we feel good when it comes. I think we want to be more efficient.
Yeah.
We want to find ways to provide some better value and some programming, and maybe professionalize that with how we communicate with our various members, because we've got a global, you know, association. We have people in Asia, we have people in Europe, we have all of that. How do we maintain an ecosystem where people can't communicate with each other at the same time? So be efficient within the organization. And I know that something we really think is missing out there that we want to be part of is also create better communication and dialogue amongst all the various associations that all of our gaming companies, operators, and suppliers alike. Let's also have a great dialogue. And if AGM can be in the middle of communicating with all of those other trade associations, AGA, CGA, GTA, you know, Gaming Standards Association, Herman, ECA, you name it, right? We've got a lot of great people that do a lot of great work in the space that's focused on gaming. Let's think about that next 10 years of it's not a localized thing. Let's talk about this on a global level and communicate amongst associations so we can benefit our members and benefit the industry better. So that's another goal that we have, Roger. And I know I'm looking forward to carrying that goal through, you know, whether we're all talking to each other a couple of times a year, you know, or quarterly, something like that, that's a goal. But also, are there legislative initiatives? Are there regulatory initiatives that are there big barriers that make it costly, time intensive, something like that? That's an initiative that folk that our suppliers that maybe don't make sense for 2025, 2030. Mm-hmm. Let's go and use AGM resources and the vehicle to try to make it better for everybody. If that's eliminating some duplication of processes, you know, the process for approving gaming technology, whether it's speeding it up, whether it's eliminating duplicative costs, finding new gaming opportunities so that the licensing process are somewhat more converged, where they're not, you know, piecemeal, right? Sure. That saves time. That saves money for all of our members. And so try to find those pockets of activity to maybe advocate and be there as a messenger for everybody. Sure. To make it better for everybody. So if, yeah, those are kind of three goals that we sit around and think about between, you know, our officers and all of our member companies and all the great team that we've got amongst AGM. We just try to want to, those are three things that we're trying to do a little bit better.
Right. Great. Great. Well, Darren, you've done a great job in your almost 3 years now. And you do have a great board there with really, really influential people. So you got a lot of help. So thanks for taking the time to join us. And we're looking forward to seeing you at G2E.
See you both, and safe travels, Robin, and see you both at G2E. Always happy to be with you guys.
Thanks for tuning into the GGB podcast sponsored by Pavilion Payments. As the gaming industry's largest vertically integrated payment provider, Pavilion Payments offers solutions that simplify, secure, and optimize the way patrons fund their play. Trusted by over 400 land-based casinos and iGaming sites, Pavilion Payments helps you boost revenue and enhance player experience with VIP Preferred. Discover more at pavilionpayments.com or visit them at the Global Gaming Expo booth 4411 to learn about how their solutions can enhance every casino guest touchpoint, from the cage to the casino floor and online. Don't miss a single episode of the GGB podcast. Subscribe on Amazon, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB podcast.